Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm John Cena.
Hey, it's professional wrestler Colt Boom Boom Cabana.
Hey, I'm Double J, Jeff here.
This is Rich Swann.
Matt Riddle, the King of Rose.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Do it, bro.
Support Ollie. Support Luke. Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Home of Luke Owen. Whatever WrestleTalk is and whoever Luke Owen is. Quote the Raven. Nevermore.
WrestleTalk. Rumble.
Hello and welcome to the WrestleTalk podcast. I'm El Fakeador Laurie Blake and I'm joined by Adam Blompier. Hi mate, how's it going?
I'm good, man. Really, 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 really happy. Really happy.
He did it, didn't he?
Yeah, we did it. He did it.
Do you know what? A little peek behind the curtain here, because obviously like we were talking last week at length about the Great American Bash and how we didn't want the finish to be a certain way. And immediately when we said that, people from the podcast were like tweeting us. They didn't spoil it for us, but they were tweeting us saying, well, if you've seen the spoilers, then I think you're going to be very happy, which, you know, gives you
that
enough.
That is a spoiler.
It kind of gives you enough to guess what might happen. But then, I was at least like, maybe Adam Cole will win here. Maybe they just think, well, we'll be happy because Karrion Kross didn't ruin the match. Someone did at least get crowned a double champion. And then, literally on the Friday, Ollie tagged everyone on Discord being like, hey, WrestleTalk management, what do you think of these thumbnails? And the first one was Keith Lee winning both championships. And it was just like, even though it was blurred out, you could so obviously
only
see
just it was not just properly about, blurred.
It was literally like, how do you know? It's like, what do you think, Keith Lee? How different to
the blur is brown, Ollie. I mean,
it was incredible. The fact that he just didn't think that we had that spoil for us. So now my goal in life is to find AEW spoilers and send them to Ollie. So if you ever have any AEW spoilers, message them to me on Twitter and then I'll message them to Ollie because I want to ruin his life for ruining my sweet, sweet programming. But we're going to talk about that programming right now, obviously starting with Keith Lee's big, big win, but then going through the rest of the show. Here it is. Big talking point from this week is that NXT has a new double champion, and it's only bloody Limitless Keith Lee. Oh, I'm so pleased. Yes. So chuffed. If you were going to give it to anyone, I think Keith Lee is the perfect choice for it. I think even more so than Adam Cole. I think like it did really feel like Adam Cole's time in NXT kind of come to a close. He's accomplished everything that you could really accomplish, and being a double champion doesn't do as much for him to cement his legacy. And I think like giving it to Keith Lee, this is the kind of character that WWE in future, like future-proofing WWE's roster. I feel like making big deals out of Keith Lee and Karrion Kross is something that will translate really well to the main roster and they will know what to do with, hopefully. Like Adam Cole as a character, I think will go up and he will have a Shawn Michaels-esque run. I think that's what they will pigeonhole him into, that sort of like, you're a small guy. Maybe you get a bit of Shawn Michaels, but more likely he's going to end up like a Daniel Bryan. But yeah, I just think this is the perfect choice. I think Keith Lee versus, like building to Keith Lee versus Karrion Kross, if that's where they're going, that is a clash of the titans that I really, really want to see. And this was a fantastic match to send Adam Cole's NXT Championship run out on. What do you think?
I'd loved it. I really strong episode of NXT. Like, it, I think this could have been a one match show. And while there definitely was a really amazing match on it, I was surprised at how kind of varied the whole night felt. But yeah, as you say, Keith Lee, my future husband, my man did it, and I'm so happy for him. Yeah, I think Michael Cole would have been the wrong choice for double champion in NXT. Unconventional, but yeah, Adam Cole would have been like. You would have faced real resentment for kind of like, he's already sort of felt like he's overstayed his welcome's the wrong like thing, because I don't think he would necessarily still be here if we had fans, but he feels like his time has passed in NXT now. And I think he is one Karrion Kross squash match away from making his debut after SummerSlam. And yeah, I can't wait. I got high hopes for Adam Cole. I think like him coming in and burning the house down with Daniel Bryan, you know, in the clutch when they really needed like a SmackDown saved. I think he's got a lot of goodwill from that. And I hope that translates into him being taken properly seriously.
I mean, he's got the perfect entrance for that sort of like, it's the pop check, isn't it? It's, you know, when people are like, oh, I don't know if anyone's, I can't really tell if they're over or not, people are cheering for the entrance, whatever. Adam Cole just does this and everyone shouts his name. It's like, yep, he's still over. That's good. That's all we have to do to check. And yeah, I just think this was such a good send off for Cole. Like this was a matter. There was no shenanigans from the Undisputed Era. There was no cheating. This was just Adam Cole, serious champion, comes out and puts on a really hard fought match against Keith Lee. He took Keith Lee to his limit, but Keith Lee is limitless, and Keith Lee wins out in the end. I thought there were some really, really fun moments in this as well. I liked the idea that sort of Cole was being like, not devious, but Cole was being like clever about his offense. He was trying to chop down the bigger man. And Keith Lee was very confident early on. And like, he was kind of having fun in this scenario. He's been in a situation where he's never really had Adam Cole one-on-one before. In it, like, he's always been swarmed by other people. He's been working his way through the Undisputed Era and everyone else to get to Adam Cole, and now he finally has him. And there's all these bits like, you know, do you remember Johnny Gargano? I remember Johnny Gargano. And then he runs and tries to push him through the barricade, and obviously that backfires. And then there was the bit where the Ivan Drago bit in the corner where he's like, I must break him with a... I really like this kind of like showing Keith Lee's charisma in a match, because he's had obviously a lot of amazing moments in WWE. Especially in NXT, of like, you know, the sort of rising from defeats and the like, just all of his amazing feats of athleticism as well. But he doesn't always get the chance to really show his personality beyond the names of his moves and being like, oh, a bit of a geek, I'm a bit of a dork, I'm quite funny. And this was kind of a nice opportunity to get like the notion that going forward, Keith Lee, the double champion of NXT, the guy that the brand is going to be built around for the next little while at least, is a very charismatic guy, and you should be paying attention to that, because that's like, it's now going to be shown in the matches. It's not just about how crazy an athlete he is, because obviously he is, feels like a once in a generation athlete, really. And yeah, I think Adam Cole hung with him quite well here. Do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're in a difficult place with kind of Keith Lee, I think is brilliant, but I think babyface champions, I think, need to have that conversation with the fans, which is not me taking away from this moment, like the confetti. Like I felt it, not just because Keith Lee's one of my favorite wrestlers, but just because this felt like a journey that had been in the works for a while, and not just because WWE had to kind of change gears massively. It's just that, you know, we have Drew McIntyre winning at WrestleMania. We have Keith Lee winning here. I just think the only thing that's difficult is that neither of those men have had a chance to really, and it's not just about, you know, getting the "you deserve it" chance, but they haven't really had that chance to have that conversation with the fans of being like, this is who I am as your champion. With the heels, you don't need to do that as much, because they don't listen to the fans. They're just like, here's who I am, it doesn't matter what you think of me, this is me staying, you know, laying out my manifesto for my title reign. And it's just weird. The only thing that I have any regrets over is, yeah, we don't have this moment in front of fans, and Keith Lee can sort of receive the adulation that he deserves and just truly like feel like he is a a people's champion because he's so over, he's so beloved, because he does have that raw charisma, that completely unique style that, yeah, like you say, once in a generation athlete. It's just a shame that until fans come back, which is not going to be SummerSlam now, that's confirmed. It's weird, like neither him nor Drew McIntyre's title, I don't think that title change is going to feel complete until you have that first moment with him having belts in front of the fans. And I hope that, oh, I mean, it depends what they're going to do with Karrion Kross, but I hope he's still champion when fans come back. That's all, yeah, I hope.
Yeah, I really do hope so. I think you need to give him a good run. And I think, like, you know, you don't want to do what you did with, what they did with Becky as well, like the other most recent two belt champion, and just go like, well, next pay-per-view, one of them has to go. You can't be both champions. We need to start spreading this around between everyone. I think it's a great way to give someone a load of heat, though, if you did want to choose, like, making Keith Lee drop the belt, one of the belts immediately. Like, it is a really good way to sort of build up a heel into, you know, I would say that maybe the NXT championship is the better one to take off him. But, you know, I think they with Becky, they obviously did the SmackDown belt comes off Becky and she becomes the Raw champion, because that's the bigger belt. So, like, I imagine the North American championship will be dropped pretty sharply from Keith Lee, unless they're going to unify the belts, which I don't think they should do. That's the wrong choice. I like having the two belts in NXT. I think it gives the roster depth and people more stuff to fight over. This is just a shame that it has to happen without fans. And, you know, this feels like a momentous occasion, and it feels like maybe we were sort of rushed into it because this was booked against Fyter Fest. Sorry, there's so many fight AEW things in my head. Was like, Fight for the Fallen, Fight for the... And I was like, no, okay, Fyter Fest. like, this was just booked against Fyter Fest, and they wanted something really big and momentous to be like, no, this is serious. We always intended to do the Great American Bash, which maybe they did. I don't really know. Uh-huh. And I think they definitely felt like this was something they wanted to do with Keith Lee. Like, I was always saying it felt like Keith Lee was the one to beat Adam Cole, and really, I think doing it in a way that cements him as... an outstanding example of an NXT wrestler. Like, you know, he's the first ever double champion in NXT. Like, that really is the way to go with him, because the year that he had last year was just phenomenal from the moment NXT went on USA. Like, I don't think anyone's made that much impact on Raw, SmackDown and NXT except Adam Cole. So this really was like... for all the marbles, this is for all the props, and you can't take anything away from Adam Cole here in losing this. I don't think he loses anything. Like, he's had such an amazing run. I think Keith Lee is the right guy to lose the belt to as well, because it's Keith Lee. I imagine he can kick out of however many last shots you want to do Adam Cole, however many Panama sunrises you want to go for. Like, I really do think he could. And, you know, there are moments here where Cole kicks out some of Lee's greatest offense. Like, there was a moment that I thought that was a brilliant moment where Lee gets him in a spirit bomb and Cole just does the one finger on the ropes, a la Kevin Owens. The sort of contemptuous I'm getting out of this. It was really smartly booked, and I think it was just a really, really fun matchup and a great way to send Adam Cole out. Like, I kind of hope this is Adam Cole done in NXT. Like,
nah, Karrion Kross is going to kill him.
You think Karrion Kross is going to kill him?
Yeah.
And so then we won't get like Ciampa back, and I don't know. Like, if we get Ciampa back, and then is everyone going to expect Cole to come back? I don't know. It feels like there's the kind of class of NXT that has been there for, like, they've all been held back a year. because of the USA deal, and now because of COVID. So, like, yeah, it really feels like it's time to start moving people on. And I think Adam Cole is your prime example of someone who also already has a bit of cachet on Raw and SmackDown and could really make a proper impact there. Like, you know, if he'd got the Matt Riddle booking off the bat to just walk in and sort of go toe-to-toe with AJ Styles, I'd be really, really hot for that feud.
Yeah.
And I kind of hope that they do something similar with Cole and the Undisputed Era in general, and just immediately insert them into a championship picture.
It's very weird to see the Undisputed Era. Like, so in one of the Mountain Dew sponsored kind of like adverts, so you saw like the Undisputed Era, there was a little shot. It was tucked away inside an ad break, like off to the side of the screen. But there was a shot of the Undisputed Era arriving. So I was really, really surprised, like pleasantly surprised that they didn't come out. And, you know,
I don't know if I missed as I was kind of scrubbing through to get to the matches. I don't know if I missed Cole telling the Undisputed Era not to come out, but it was it was a really nice little touch. Let's be honest, this was supposed to happen at SummerSlam. I don't think it was supposed to happen these two specific weeks in the year, because SummerSlam is one of two hard resets for NXT. You know, you have you either go up after WrestleMania or you go up after SummerSlam, like Bayley did, and I think that's when we'll lose Adam Cole. But the kind of pedigree of the matches he's had kind of speaks for themselves, and this was a 20-minute modern classic. I absolutely loved it. Like it doesn't have necessarily as much of the kind of storytelling nous that some of the greater takeover matches had, because like you say, this was built to a little hurriedly. Keith Lee, you'd think, you'd have Undisputed Era making Keith Lee's life terrible for a while, and then he'd overcome the odds and even the playing field finally for his final showdown with him and Cole, but it was sort of slapped together. But with a generally storyless match, like these two are two of the greatest athletes in wrestling today, given time to tell a story, not go too crazy with the false finishes, and have one of the best TV matches on NXT in a very long time. I really, really liked it.
They're such a wonderful pairing as well. I think they complement each other, like in that way that Dijak and Lee complement each other, because they are just like the same blueprint. And that means that all the sort of like, look at the crazy flying guys, they can just both match each other in that. I think here, because they're opposites, they work so well together, because Lee has the versatility to take Cole's regular offense, like the Panama Sunrise, etc., which, you know, imagine Cole trying to hit Panama Sunrise on Braun Strowman, not gonna happen, but Keith Lee can do it. But then Cole is light enough for Keith Lee to pick up like he's paper and just be like, "Wee, look, I've chosen that you're having a superplex now, so please brace yourself. I don't need anything from you. It's just happening. You are just being picked up off the blooming apron."
I think this was the match that I kind of was hoping that Gargano Lee would be. And Gargano Lee was a different match, and I actually really liked it. But that was much more of a kind of a moustache twiddling, villainy match from Johnny Gargano working off an injury. Whereas obviously Keith Lee, he can flip himself into a Canadian Destroyer. He's that special. He can hit a moonsault, and he finally did. Hooray, hit his moonsault.
He liked it though when he finally hit it. He was like, "Oh, that, do you know what? Maybe not hitting these is the better way for me."
It was a borderline Lita moonsault. It looks scary, but he definitely hit it.
He did do it from the second rope though, rather than Lita's is top rope and all downwards. Lee's was at least like, he just didn't have as much space.
Lita's is a coffin drop with slightly more rotation, just slightly. Congratulations to Keith Lee. Who would you say is prime challenger? Let's say they're doing a takeover before SummerSlam, who would you run against Keith Lee?
Priest, probably.
Ooh. Would you make him do it twice? You'd make him defend both belts?
Yeah, I would. I think at SummerSlam, I would make him defend two belts, but I would probably try and get a challenger in before that. And I would want to take the North American title off him ASAP. Probably not at the first defense, but I would stack all the deck against him in terms of competition. So maybe putting Johnny Gargano back into the North American title picture might be a good one, as like a, yeah, and you can play out that again, that devious side of him, and then give him someone really big to take on for the NXT championship. And then I think, yeah, Cross should have his match against Cole maybe at that takeover. And then after that, you move Cole, you move Cross into a program with Keith Lee, and Cross could be the one to take one of the belts off of Keith Lee. Because again, I think Keith Lee's, while obviously amazing, I am like, they must be salivating at the idea of getting him on Raw and SmackDown. So I imagine this run might be shorter than you think with these two belts, because yeah, they're going to want him. Like he is star power. I think you're going to want him by Survivor Series, really, because you're going to want a repeat of the Survivor Series stuff, but this time on the team of Raw, who like to win all of Survivor Series. So
I think you could be run. I think you could, I think he's probably going to lose his North American championship first and then kind of pull it out the bag at the last minute for the big gold. It's like, I'm thinking next takeover, Karrion versus Cole. I think maybe Gargano Lee for North American, because Johnny Gargano is going to make him, you know, defend both because he's a sniveling little dirt bag. And I think we might get the belt on Gargano so they can work towards man and wife champs, which I feel, which feels like the kind of story going there with, you know, after the match with Yim, she's like, well, we got some things to make right. And I think Candice is going to have her eye on EO. And then I think who do you run against? Keith Lee, maybe Ciampa back. If you want, you know, maybe if we're going to lose Ciampa after SummerSlam as well, who knows? In terms of like who's like in line for an NXT title,
wasted opportunity with Ciampa if they do that though, right? Like it just feels like, I don't know, I want to see him have Goldie again, and I don't want him to lose gold. Like I don't want him to go up against Keith Lee because it's just, it feels like an impossible choice. I'd really want to see him have that run with Goldie that he never got to really have.
You know, it'd be interesting. I'd be quite like, I know, I think we probably should get Karrion Kross doing something at the next takeover. And I think he, after, you know, destroying Ciampa, like I don't think he can go back to just a nobody. So Cole seems like the guy.
Yeah.
But I would quite like to see Keith Lee defending the NXT championship against the entire Undisputed Era, like a fatal, like a fatal four way, just like have so Cole basically being like, well, I didn't have my boys. So right now, fatal four way, everyone in the pool were doing this, and Lee kind of survives that way.
Or like an undisputed gauntlet match. Keith Lee starts in with like, yeah, Bobby, and then it's Kyle, and then it's Roddy, and then it's Cole, and he has to beat all of them to retain. That'd be a lot of fun. But yeah, I think there's some really good stuff they can do with Keith Lee. Like I think you need to hype up the fact that he, you know, it's remarkable that he won the championships. I think, you know, you want to stack the deck against him as much as possible and have him overcome and overcome and overcome, and then Karrion Kross, boom, NXT championship down the drain. He's the champion now. And that brings Karrion Kross up to that level. Not to say that Karrion Kross hasn't really been already billed at that level, but I just think you would immediately elevate him to like, these are the two titanic forces at the top of our card. And probably two of the biggest names there's going to be going forward in WWE.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
We have spent a long time talking about Keith Lee and that match.
You would, wouldn't you?
Which is good. So, but let's talk about the rest of the show. And the rest of the show actually started with Keith Lee's missus, Mia Yim, taking on Candice LeRae in a street fight. This was a lot of fun. And like, obviously, like Candice is very well known for on the indies doing a lot of crazy stuff in matches. And this kind of like, was felt like the feud boiling over, right? They've both come out to fight. Mia Yim attacks during Candice's entrance. There's this crazy spot where Mia Yim drop kicks Candice off some random bit of architecture, like a weird table thing, through the catering table, which no one was after those bananas or those oranges. Adam, those oranges were still completely in the wrappers.
It's important to get your fluids as close to the food as possible, especially nowadays. It was very much do you remember that weird table of crisps from the Edge and Orton match? They just went backstage and just found this random table with just a bunch of crisps on it. It felt like one of those things. It's like, what do we do to make it look like catering? I don't know, just put some fruit there and it'll be fine.
Yeah, it was just like, it was two bits of fruit on one end, and on the other end, like a platter of what looked like chocolate, like on like a lovely silver presentational platter. Like
a few bags of pork scratchings, you know, what you expect.
It was absolutely mental. Like, I mean, a lot of my notes here, like, and also Candice then did the, so after the drop kick, and she's me and trying to pick her up. Or maybe it was before. And then like Candice did what in my head is a Johnny Gargano move and used the fire extinguisher, which I think Johnny has done 100 times in NXT so far. But I like that. I like the kind of call, like they both did callbacks to each other in their matches on this card. And I thought that was really cool. There was a really good bit where Mia put Candice in the bin, did a big running boot to the bin, and then did her cannonball into it, which I just don't know how you protect yourself when that you don't know it's coming. Like, you know, everyone protects themselves from the cannonball by crawling backwards through the turnbuckles to be like, I'm not really in the ring anymore. You're just going to hit my chest. And like, if you're just in a bin, you just don't know. So like, this was more hardcore than I think I was imagining it being. Like it ended with Mia was going for the big, she had the brass knuckles and she punched a chair, and then Candice nails with the chair. She gets up to go and she dumps all chairs over. Mia climbs up onto the table that they've set up on the turnbuckle and is going to jump off. Mia cuts her off. They have a bit of a brawl. Candice manages to hit this diving, swinging neck breaker after nailing her with the nux onto the pile of chairs and just drapes one singular arm over and picks up the win. That was amazing. That was such a good finish, and like, props to them for taking that as well, because that's horrible. That looked absolutely disgusting. Then it went to a break, and we obviously saw what was happening in the break. Johnny comes out and he picks up Candice and leads her out, and they celebrate. But then Mia Yim stayed in the ring and got like standing ovation from the audience. And I don't know whether this was just because they were like, well, we're not going to a break, so just put something in the break that. That sort of fills the time that isn't that like important for people to miss, because otherwise they'd have to start building into the next match or do like a bunch, you know, do the Undisputed Era turning up earlier, which is, I think, was easy enough to kind of miss while someone's telling you about Jew Nation or like Shaquille O'Neal's selling you pizza.
Oh, the Shaq-a-roni.
Yeah, or they're talking about how vaping is really bad for you. Or American advertising, it's wonderful. Or that one with the big foot that keeps being on.
Do the do, Laurie.
What does that mean?
Do it.
The idea that also they're selling like Mountain Dew bottles with the branding of 50 different states on them. And if you buy all of them, you get $100. But if you've bought all of them, you've spent probably about $100. And also, are you traveling? Do you have, like, do you only sell them in the certain states that they're from? So do you have to go to 50 states to get $100? Is that worth it? Like,
if you get all 50 of them, you get a very special frame certificate of being the world's saddest man.
Yeah, and it's lurid green, because that's the Mountain Dew branding. But yeah, so Mia
does wonders to your piss, I'm sure.
It's like, yeah, it's the asparagus of drinks. And so like, Mia stays in the ring though and gets this standing ovation. So that did just make me wonder, like, that feels like that's like what happens at the end of someone's tenure in NXT usually, or just with WWE in general, you get that night, that big moment of like, well done. Like, so I wonder if Mia Yim is on the way up. It feels like it might be a bit of a weird time to do that if Keith Lee has just won the championships and you're still sort of, you know, it feels like the Gargano Candice story isn't quite done yet. You know, that we still want the Yimitless Cup, the Yimitless couple against the Garganos, and to build something out of that. So I don't know, but I just wonder whether it was. And I think maybe it feels like Mia Yim has achieved all she's going to achieve in NXT. Like, she's been in the championship picture quite a few times. She's been heavily featured. And she really recently has been on a quite a major winning streak in terms of, like, beating most people apart from in the Fatal 4-Way, obviously, to become number one contender. But, like, she has beaten a lot of people recently. And then this Candice feels like putting all of that momentum into Candice now, and maybe it's time for Mia Yim to take a step back, and then maybe that step back is a step up to a different roster. I don't know. What happened after that, though, was Bronson Reed took on Tony Nese. My first note for this match is that Tony Nese desperately needs a gimmick, like an actual, like an actual gimmick.
Excuse me, he has eight of them.
But pointing at your abs is not a gimmick. It's not a gimmick. It's not a good character. There's a reason I don't think he's like really gaining any momentum in WWE, because this proved once again he's bloody fantastic. I really love Tony Nese's like in-ring style. I just hate the premier athlete. I use gimmick really scathingly and lightly here, because it's not a gimmick to just go count them one. Like,
he's got eight. How many have you got? I've got one. I know that much. Just yeah, one big one.
I've got some, but they're on the inside. I thought this was really good. This was Bronson Reed getting a bit of momentum back after being smushed by Karrion Kross. This was a really good pairing. I think, like, Nese was doing all he could to, like, take the mick out of Bronson's cardio, essentially. Like, there was the brilliant moonsault off the top, and they did some jumping jacks, and then he gets flattened.
I love it.
And just got slapped out of the air. No. And then he does the big military press and the huge senton. I love Nese's. There was a moment where Nese just did this crazy, he obviously slapped his leg, but just did this mental throat punch to Bronson Reed, and then did the slingshot stun gun onto the ropes, and then hit his springboard triangle moonsault back into the ring. And just like, Tony Nese is just, he is amazing. I just wish they would either turn the sort of snarky, my body's better than yours thing up more, or give him a different gimmick. Because he could be sort of almost like a dashing Cody Rhodes style character, but for just being in like a model shape, I guess. I don't know. Like, I think he's great. I just wonder why they just don't give him more to do. And obviously, like, it's because he keeps getting squashed by Bronson Reed. Because then Bronson Reed hits a big splash and wins the match after sort of kicking out of the moonsault.
It's weird, isn't it? Like, he's so good, is Tony Nese. It's like, he sort of, like, what is the difference really between, because like when Buddy Murphy was 205 Live, like Cruiserweight Champ, everyone like loved him. He was very, very popular in that role before he sort of became Seth Rollins's sidekick. And I was trying to wonder, like, what is the difference between like Buddy Murphy, you know, cocky heel, amazing in the ring, and Tony Nese, cocky heel, amazing in the ring? Because I think I do agree with you. I think there is, you feel like there's something missing from Tony Nese, but you didn't necessarily feel like that with Buddy Murphy. Is that just because Buddy Murphy was being sort of featured in the WWE kind of like main roster machine, but wasn't quite getting his? Like, he wrestled against Roman Reigns, he wrestled against like Daniel Bryan. Like, he had a couple of really good matches, but never felt like he got what he was deserving. Whereas Tony Nese is a same size fish in a smaller pond. Like, I don't, like, what what's the kind of thing there?
I think it's more because people already knew Buddy Murphy, right, coming from NXT. And like, I think Blake and Murphy were a very good tag team, but they were sort of at that point in NXT where most of it was a bit unremarkable, and then they dropped the belts to the Vaudevillains, I believe, and that's when, like, I think you got some slightly bigger characters coming through NXT and more for people to grab onto, because Blake and Murphy just didn't really have character. Mm-hmm. Like, and really their pairing was all about Alexa Bliss, and that's how the main roster viewed them when they went, we'll just take Alexa Bliss, thank you. And that left them completely rudderless. But then Murphy got in crazy shape and came back with all this new offense when he joined the Cruiserweight division. And I think that everyone was just so shocked at the transformation that really bought him a lot of cachet to be like, you know. And I think he got really good presentation with the Cruiserweight stuff, where they were, you know, saying that he kept having to make weight for 205 Live because he looked too big to be on 205 Live, and you know, realistically probably was, but like, I think they gave him that sort of like, he is almost a heavyweight in a lightweight division, and he had really good packaging. And I think Tony Nese just turned up as the premier athlete, had 8 abs already, and 5 years later is still trying to count them. you've reached them, you've counted them, Nese. And I think that's probably why, because I do think that, you know, they even had a brief pairing for a very short period of time. But yeah, I just think Buddy Murphy, even just look wise, has more charisma. I don't know. Like, there's something, he's got a bit more of a magnetic presence, I think, than Nese does. And maybe that's just because, yeah, Nese's current gimmick is almost like, it's too basic. It's too like top line. I count my abs.
Mm.
I can do flips and stuff. That's great, but I count my abs. And obviously he's also used mostly in enhancement roles to make other people look really, really good, which I think he did here. Reed looked fantastic coming out of this. Nese obviously looked fantastic. I just would like to see more from him because they keep featuring him, but he doesn't really have much to him.
Can we talk about the setup of this match, which is apparently there was a dark match in the Great American Bash. And it's just like, okay, you do realize that the fans in the audience don't need warming up, right? Because they work there. I love the idea that they're doing these dark matches in front of their fellow trainees. It's just like, where does training stop in a dark match for the Great American Bash start?
This is how you really do a wrestling. Leon Ruff, get out here, mate. it's baffling logic. But then more baffling logic was the next section, which was Robert Stone was asking Shotzi Blackheart to join the brand. Obviously, look at those shoes.
Oofed.
Wow. You shall go to the ball.
Kick your heels.
This was exactly. There's no place like home. That's probably what he's thinking. I started watching Titan Games over the weekend, which is The Rock's version of Gladiators. It's the only way I can describe it, or Wipeout, I guess. And he was on it, Robert Strauss. He was in the first, he's like in episode 3 of the first season. And he gets a very short, brief moment where they go like, yeah, he's a wrestler, and they do like a montage of stuff, and he idolizes The Rock, etc. But he cannot work out the first challenge and fails miserably. Not the best run for Robert Stone, and now here he is in NXT. So he asks Shotzi to join the brand, and then Killian Dane arrives and attacks him, throws him down to the floor.
In a proper Chris Jericho Kane moment, he accidentally spills coffee on a big man, gets thrown into the wall, and then Shotzi runs over his foot with a tank. Eat her tank.
She did it for The Rock. Why?
Just increasingly sad life of Robert Stone.
It's just not, I'm not amused anymore by watching this man, this poor guy get like, just for the nerve of asking people to be their manager. Like, yeah, he's not even doing it obnoxiously. It's not even like he's, you know, the Rhea Ripley one, I guess, was a little bit obnoxious because he asked, like, he was like, you know, I'm going to force you to be on my brand. But here he's just like asking quite nicely, gets into a bit of a fight with Shotzi. I don't know. I feel bad for him. I think he should just get some business cards printed and just leave them around the place and then wait for the calls rather than... I think going out and networking isn't his thing.
I think, like, we talked about it last week, and it's just like, this properly feels like it's going nowhere. So it just feels cruel, which is like, whatever. I'm sure, you know, it's TV time. I'm sure something will happen eventually when they figure out, but right now it feels quite aimless. You know what these start to feel like? These feel like the, you ever see the Mr. White, That's Not Wise segments where the kind of referee who had to retire because of a shoulder injury had a series of vignettes on Raw where he was being interviewed by Josh Matthews and he kept trying to commit suicide. Do you remember that? Yeah, referee Tim White was basically just like every week Josh Matthews would go, and it's the increasingly sad life of Tim White, and he would just go and see how Tim White was doing, and Tim White would just try and kill himself in a different way, like by swallowing rat poison or by blowing or like blowing his head off with a shotgun. And yeah, it was like, oh, dark, horrible stuff, way more dark and horrible than this. But it just starts to feel but it had that kind of aimless cruelty, that general sense that someone in the back is laughing at this. No one, like, this is like maybe just Road Dogg by himself chortling at the increasing misadventures of Robert Stone. It's just like, well, either take it somewhere or like, because at the, you know, it's just the same joke over and over again. And Robert Stone can pull this face however much he wants, but there are such a thing as diminished returns. And we don't like, I want to care about Robert Stone. I want to care about his story, because he's, you know, he's trying to get, you know, he wants something and he's trying to achieve something, which is an interesting thing for a character to do. But yeah, shame.
It's like we said about the Rhea Ripley thing, like the better outcome would have been Rhea Ripley being forced to work with Robert Stone. Like that is a much better storyline. Instead, Rhea Ripley just moves on having beaten a man and a woman. And where was she on this week's NXT?
Yeah.
Robert Stone's still getting featured for the purposes of being mocked viciously. And I don't know, like, yeah, it does just feel like it's going nowhere. And it feels kind of cruel because the situation he's in is entirely the doing of WWE and NXT for just being like, well, we're taking Chelsea Green. We're not going to do anything with Chelsea Green now that we've got her, but we're taking Chelsea Green. And that means you're completely aimless. So you can have, what's in the cupboard? Oh, it's Aaliyah. Here's Aaliyah. Have this Aaliyah. See what you can do with it. Oh no, we put you in the bin. Why are you not getting over Robert Stone? Why are you not getting over, you smelly bin man?
Needs more vomit.
I don't know. I think the Robert Stone stuff is nonsense. I want to see it go away. Or at least I hope it sort of, they sort of do a very slow face turn with it. And, you know, we can finally have a heroic Robert Stone moment where someone big signs the brand and he has success. Cause that really only feels like what's worth doing with it now. Like, they have made him so pathetic that I don't want to see him succeed while they're still like, he's a heel. It's like, is he a heel? He's done nothing wrong for weeks.
He's just trying to do his job. He's an agent.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's so weird. The next match, we've talked about this a little bit before we came on this podcast, actually, and it's Swerve versus Johnny Gargano. You really liked it. I wasn't massively blown away by this. I thought there was more that these two could have done. It was very like, this was a match about matching speed and matching technique. And it was very much like the two guys showing off that they both had each other's number. And there was a lot of moments in this where like they were dodging out moves and stuff. And then like a couple of times they did sort of like, leg up, I'm going to kick you. And they both did it at the same time. Like, I see, I've called you. It felt indie wrestling more so than a normal Johnny Gargano match. I still think it's good. I still think both guys are great, but it felt slow for these two. Like, I felt that there was a quicker pace match here that they could have done, like a bit more, I think, stuff hitting a bit quicker and like a bit more fluidly. Not to say that the dodging and stuff isn't cool and obviously very well choreographed, but I just felt like there was some of the stuff where like the near falls and things lacked a bit of impact because they just came a little bit slower than I was expecting. So I don't really know. How did you find it?
I liked it. It felt like a Gargano match I haven't seen for a little while, because Gargano's either been featured in sort of like heel matches or squashes mostly. I dug it. Because like you said, yeah, it's very indie wrestling. But like I say, on this card, I thought NXT were quite shrewd in the variation of the match. You have some trios, you've got a huge kind of like heavyweight clash, you've got a garbage fight, you've got a monster squash, you have a kind of like a little highly choreographed indie dance showcase, and I liked it. I thought Gargano I haven't seen Gargano kind of work his incredibly choreographed chain wrestling in a while, so it felt kind of nice and refreshing for me at least. And I think the pairing of him and Swerve is a pairing I'd actually like to see again.
Yeah.
Ideally with a crowd, but I Poison Run on the outside. I like the little kind of going for the tombstone. Johnny grabs the ropes and they sort of counted into a Michinoku driver. It very indie, but I liked it. It gave the show something else, reminded us all that, oh yeah, we did fall in love with Johnny Gargano for a reason. And I think it does kind of, I'm interested to see what Johnny Gargano does next. And to be honest, if it's like a 2 out of 3 falls, you know, if they build something out of like a 2 out of 3 falls matches with Swerve Scott, I'm not a guinea. I had fun.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought there was just a couple of moments for me where I was just like, I don't really understand why anyone's done that. Like that, I think my go-to is one where Swerve whips Johnny into the corner. Johnny does an up and over, and Swerve like runs into the corner. Johnny then runs back to the center of the ring and then like pikes and goes back to the corner, like laterally along from where Swerve is, jumps over that, goes to the middle of the apron. Swerve runs back into the center of the ring, is like, where is Johnny gone? Turns around and gets the through the rope spear. That just all felt a bit like, I don't know, it just didn't flow in the way I was kind of expecting it to. And I think that's kind of what was missing for this match, was like, it didn't necessarily flow as smoothly as I wanted it to. I think everything they did was very impressive and very cool. I really loved what the Poison Piranha outside was the particular highlight for me, but there was a lot of misses and a lot of like, it was almost like too much dodging and not enough offense being hit.
Yeah, like Johnny Gargano's matches can lack a bit of psychological connective tissue, which is why kind of I think Adam Cole does that as well, which is why him and Adam Cole kind of got too ridiculous for its own good at one point. And I think when this match was only supposed to go, you know, less than 10 minutes, obviously they wanted to cram as much of stuff in there as they could, and there wasn't really a good like story underpinning for it. So yeah, I can understand it, make it feel quite throwaway, and some of the spots feel a bit more contrived. I like flips. I like martial arts dodging. It's fun. Like, you know, wrestling's as fake as a martial arts movie. I agree. They should try and tell a story that makes sense. And if you do catch out wrestlers being just like, that spot doesn't make sense, then yeah, they've had an error there, because that's you are supposed to be able to suspend your disbelief. So that's completely valid. It's just that I had a nice time.
You don't mind.
I clap my little hands.
I liked it. I think there is that missing bit there that would have made it really like, I actually have kind of preferred Johnny's more recent heel matches, because he's got a real character going and like a real way of wrestling. And like, I obviously love babyface Johnny Gargano and the big showcase he put on with Ciampa and stuff, but they were so psychologically driven. One thing I really loved, and I think this might actually be my, like, beyond the main event, this is probably my highlight of the show, was the next package between Tegan Nox and Io Shirai. One, because it was both brilliant and absurd, because Io Shirai is delivering her promo about Tegan Nox coming for the NXT Women's Championship from underwater. Her voice has been dubbed to sound underwater. She is like in this fish tank holding the NXT Women's Championship. She's breathing bubbles. She like surfaces like an alligator ready for the fight. Meanwhile, Tegan Nox is like, you came from the land of the rising sun and I came from Wales, and here I am in a park with a tree, and
there is a dog in the distance.
She looked like she was in the training montage from like Captain America Winter Soldier, like the,
on your left, yeah,
the on your left bit. Like she's just working out in a park with a resistance band and a sports gear and doing squats, and meanwhile Io's being like that. Yeah, I don't know, like the sea witch.
Yeah,
it was such a juxtaposition, because also it wasn't just a promo in which Tegan Nox said her bit and Io Shirai said her bit. They were talking to each other. That it was cut as if they were having a conversation, because Io was saying something and then Tegan was like, "Well, Io, no, that's not true at all." It was bonkers, and I really liked it.
Yeah, like Io is presented as being like this sort of science abomination from a horror anime, especially with that Japanese voiceover. I loved it. And Tegan is having a nice day in the park. I mean, they're not being packaged necessarily as evil, as equals, which is fine, because I think like that Tegan Nox is going to get out of this, hopefully, a really good match, a hard fought loss, and is going to emerge with Ray's stock. I don't think anyone's expecting Tegan Nox to win next week. Not even Tegan. But like, it's all the right steps you need to sort of build up Tegan Nox. And it's just like, that's the thing, is Io is just already there. She's found her perfect kind of packaging. I love the underwater stuff. Mm. It's so weird. And she looks amazing with just ghostly lighting. She just looks like, yeah, that kind of this haunted girl from a Japanese horror, from a J horror. It's brilliant.
And I think I'm really looking forward to the match next week. The only thing is I hope that Tegan goes for that ridiculous reverse cannonball that she does and just, you know, just smacks her out of the air. It hits her so hard that Tegan learns never to do that stupid move again, because it's awful, that silly reverse cannonball. It looks like she drops herself on her own head more than she hurts her opponent. But yeah, can't wait for that match. Really fun presentation.
Yeah, it was brilliant. We then got like a quick, there was a really quick tail of the tape for Keith Lee versus Adam Cole. The only reason I think this is remarkable because they'd written the intangible at the bottom, and it was that Adam Cole is undisputed and Keith Lee is limitless. I love just the sort of the pointless throwing around of words as if that matters. Like, really the big thing is like Keith Lee's size and weight written on this tail of the tape, I think, more than anything else. But yeah, we're going to talk about the intangible of just being undisputed at what? You have to be undisputed at something.
The tail of the tape. It would appear that Keith has no limits. You've got to imagine that's an advantage going into this match.
Except that we've listed his height and weight as an exact figure. So riddle me that, NXT. We then got Legado del Fantasma versus Breezango and Maverick. This was, I think, quite clever psychologically, this match. This was all about Fantasma staying away from Maverick. Maverick was desperate to go one-on-one in the ring with Fantasma. And everything that Legado del Fantasma did was to keep that hot tag until the perfect possible moment in the match where Maverick finally tags in and gets in there with Fantasma. He starts this huge flurry. He gets his running bulldog and starts to build to the finish. But then everyone rolls back in and there's a bit of a scrap. Maverick ill-advisedly goes to the top rope, gets caught, and then put into the Phantom Driver. And that's the 1-2-3 for Legado del Fantasma. One thing I didn't necessarily like about this match was that Breezango came out in the Lucha masks with like the backdrop, and it was all a bit goofy, because I feel like the stakes are really big for Maverick. Like, Maverick has been wearing a neck brace. He's like, this is the thing that, like, he got his job back from this, sure, but this is the thing that sort of like almost ruined that Cinderella story. This was like the big sort of black spot at the end of his fairy tale comeback. And yeah, Breezango just like, luchadors, we're just luchadors. And he like, and then he immediately walks out like, what are you doing, guys?
Yeah, he looked pissed, which is really funny. Like, it's just, imagine if you're going into like sort of the biggest fight of your life and like, something that you've been really focused on. It's like incredibly emotionally meaningful for you. And you've organized your best mate is going to be your second, and he turns up on a unicycle. You'd be just like, okay, we're not coming at this from the right perspective. You need to be a bit more focused. I thought like, Breezango had their little moments, but it's clear that they were kind of thrown in here as a means to get it a 3-on-3. This is much more about establishing Legado del Fantasma. They did a nice, like that little trios move there. Very good. They did like one move where it's just like, okay, they're working as a three, but like the result here was never in doubt. I wasn't sure that Maverick was going to get pinned. Like, they thought they might give him something, like he's like, oh, well, I wasn't pinned. But it's like, Maverick, you need to go away and heal up and try another day, mate. They've got your number, pal.
I think something more distracting as well would have been really good in the finish here. Like, I think everyone rolled into the ring, but like, it was like, for argument's sake, I'm going to say it was Breeze and Wild and Fandango and Mendoza on opposite sides of the ring. They had a very quick like, whoa, and then like rolled out again almost immediately. And nothing happened in that affected what Maverick was doing with Fantasma.
Yeah, it's true.
And then all that happens is Maverick goes up on the turnbuckle and Fantasma gets up quick enough to knock him off and then gets the Phantom Driver. Like,
and that wasn't even explicitly played into the neck injury either. Like, if it'd been the nagging injury that just caught Maverick at that last moment, but he basically just, went to the top turnbuckle like an idiot, because Drake Maverick is the world's stupidest man. And yeah, Escobar scouted him and kicked his leg out from under his leg.
Yeah, and exactly. I think that's the thing. It's like something here where Wild and Mendoza got, fought off Breezango and then helped Fantasma pick up the win would have positioned Drake more as the underdog, right? Like, here, he had all the help in the world and he still lost again. for like, and for just being, for making the wrong choice, not from something that, you know, not from just being the babyface who was on the rise here and about to win, like, and someone comes in and cuts him off, and you can at least go like, oh, they're sneaky, those guys. They don't play fairly. They're triple teaming him. Every single time it's Drake making all the mistakes here. And unless they're going to start addressing that and making that part of the story, like, he keeps running into, like, Beth Phoenix on commentary said, like, Drake Maverick's, here's some qualities that Drake Maverick does not lack: courage, bravery. And I was like, yeah, ... stupidity. Like, it,
the tail of the tape.
He just, yeah, he's intangible. Really dumb.
A fathomless lack of strategy.
Yeah, it just, I don't know what they're doing with him. Like, I you know, it's so hard because you're just like, oh, I just want to, I think you had a guy who was the ultimate babyface coming out of that, you know, interim cruiserweight championship tournament, and you are just ruining that with this booking, because you're not actually making him more of a babyface. You're making him an idiot. Like, I think he could be, you know, a guy who fought really valiantly in that competition, and then doesn't ever really get a fair shot again from getting his contract. And I think that would be the better story here. But he's getting fair shots. He doesn't have to run out on Phantasma at any of the times that he's done that. He doesn't have to run out. He doesn't have to climb the turnbuckle at the end of this triple tag match and get nailed with the finisher. Like, these are all choices that Drake has made. I don't know. Like, and so I don't know. Like, maybe they're going to do the Kurt Hawkins story with him. I don't know.
I think he'll eventually beat Escobar. Surely. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, what else has he got to recommend him for any of his other fights? It's just that, yeah, they're repeatedly, because it would have been a fairly easy switch. Basically, just like you say, Legado del Fantasma, you know, use their numbers game to take out Fandango, use their numbers game to take out Tyler Breeze, and then you've got, you know, Drake Maverick on the floor on his hands and knees with all three dudes standing over him, and he just kind of like does that. And there's a, you know, like, he, that's not him. That's not, you know, he hasn't been put in this situation because bad strategy on his part. He's been put in that situation because these guys are dicks. And then, you know, but he's not going to back down from the fight. A little bit more of the kind of courage from Drake Maverick. But you really do establish the Legado as being like, yeah, a smart trio, like a proper trio rather than a slap together one of, you know, cunning heels. It's a slight change of perspective, but I think it's just a little bit more than, you know, climbing up to the top rope, making a mistake, and then getting caught.
Yeah,
and I think a bit more story.
That would also save the Maverick Escobar showdown. Like, I think them finally getting a one-on-one, like, any type of one-on-one interaction should be the last thing that happens in this. It should literally be when the title is on the line. That's the only time that Drake gets one-on-one with Escobar and he beats the big boss. And the rest of the time, it should be numbers. It should be Drake never gets his hands properly on Escobar. Like, because I just think that builds into the underdog story. And yeah, what they've done so far is not really, he's only an underdog because of his own fault. We then had LeRae and Gargano interview backstage, and they were talking about their current victories and saying that LeRae beat Mia Yim, and she asked for it again and again and again. And Johnny said that they're the best power couple, not just in the world, but in the universe. He said that imagine if Finn Balor didn't get in his way, he'd be set to be a double champ this night. So it seems like Johnny and LeRae's luck has kind of turned around at the Great American Bash, and it feels like we might be building more into that storyline that has kind of not really come together just yet for them, because it's been used to fuel Mia Yim and Keith Lee so far. So I'm interested to see if they do go for a double champ thing. I think that's quite an interesting story.
Yeah, I'm up seeing that. And I think the name dropping of Balor suggests at least kind of like a number one contenders match, maybe to Keith Lee's North American. And then, like, maybe there's a number one contender for Keith Lee's NXT. Maybe Adam Cole is there, maybe Karrion Kross, blah, blah, blah. I would just say, like, for this, I get a slight impression of where Gargano's going, because there's really only one place for him to go. Now that one guy's got all the male championships, he's just like, well, surely everyone is gunning for Keith Lee now. Candice is just be like, does it feel like Candice's time to go for the women's belt? Like, you want Io to have a good run, but you do kind of want to see heel Candice on top as well, because, like, yeah, Matt, you know, the power couple of NXT, I think, is a lucrative storyline. It feels like this maybe should have happened before now, because now that Karrion Kross is around, it's a little trickier to kind of get that, because they are probably the power couple. But yeah, it will be interesting to see where it's going. Like, I'm really looking forward to next week's NXT now, just to get an idea of, ooh, where are we headed? Who's challenging who?
We are getting a Keith Lee celebration in the ring, and we are going to get a conga line of people coming out and being like, me. We're going to get the most like raw opening for NXT, I think, as Keith Lee celebration happens. I don't mind that. I think actually Keith Lee would benefit from a, you know, the ring is surrounded by guys after these two championships moment where, you know, Keith Lee, who I think so much of NXT has been about, like, his role within the locker room and him sort of feeling like he's on the up and up and he's friends with a lot of people and, like, he's helped a lot of people in his NXT time, like, especially taking on the Undisputed Era and stuff. He's always seemed amenable and a friend to everyone. And I think the roster turning on him because they want what he's got is actually a very interesting story to do with Lee. And like I said, I think you need to stack the deck against him. And that's probably the best way to do it, is just to show the sheer number of people who are gunning for him now. We then got a quick spotlight on Imperium, which was sponsored by Mountain Dew. And then Drew McIntyre talks about who he wants to see become double champion. He picked Adam Cole to win, as if he didn't already know the finish. Mercedes Martinez then had a match against Santana Garrett, and she beat her pretty handily.
Yes, Santana Garrett, dressed as a magical referee, did her no favors.
Yeah. Mercedes Martinez's music I found thoroughly underwhelming. Her gear I loved, like the sort of the big frill and the sort of face mask, very sensible in these times as well. Mm-hmm. But like the looking like a sort of badass Mortal Kombat character was brilliant. Garrett got more in this than I thought she would get. Frankly, like she did some sort of, like, it starts off and Martinez just starts lumping her with these short punches, like they're obvious potatoes, but they actually work brilliantly. It was like, I'm just gonna punch you.
Yeah,
I'm gonna have to deal with it. And she just socked her into the corner, but then Garrett fights back with this big arm wringer, hits an octopus, and then Martinez manages to pick her up one arm, dumps her. She misses a splash in the corner, takes a handspring elbow from Garrett, and then runs straight back out of the corner, nails a big boot, and then pretty much fisherman's buster, 1-2-3, that's the end. I think it's fine. I think it was a perfectly fine little showcase for Mercedes Martinez. I don't think her packaging quite landed for me as, like, you know, I get that you probably want to move away from her being Shayna Baszler too.
That's the vibes I was getting, and I feel bad for saying it, but like I was getting proper Shayna vibes, and just seeing her, you know, how she's been wrestling for main event recently, that kind of just, yeah, it fills you with a general despondency over anyone who even remotely reminds you of Shayna Baszler.
Yeah, so sad. And also because, yeah, like her and Baszler did have that amazing little face-off moment in the Battle Royal to decide the number one contender a while ago, which was just brilliant. Like I do kind of like the fact that she has that sort of, that she fits that same form that Baszler had in NXT. I don't necessarily feel like this match or this presentation gave her that feeling, but I also think it's probably too soon to start really hotting up Martinez as a character in the women's roster. Like, they've got a lot to sort out in very short space of time if they want to put her into a title picture or something bigger than just, I think she's going to be destroying people for the next couple of months before anything really major happens. So this was fine as a sort of first reminder of who she is, despite the fact she's debuted like three times for the NXT brand now. We then got Damian Priest saying that he's got Cameron Grimes in a match next week. Everyone will know that Cameron Grimes is a little bitch, and then he looked really happy. He was like, bitch.
Wow. Hello, Roman Reigns.
I swore on the telly. It's fine. I think Cameron Grimes and Damian Priest are going to absolutely tear it up. I really like both of the guys, so I am excited for next week. We then got Mick Foley and Shawn Michaels attempting to pick their winner from the double championship match, and both of them picked both people. So
thanks, guys.
I love Mick Foley. He was like, man, when it comes to Keith Lee and Adam Cole, there are two distinct options here. One is that Keith Lee wins, and the other is that Adam Cole wins. The wrinkle in his storytelling there was that if the match goes under 10 minutes, he thinks Lee's got it. And if it goes over 10 minutes, he thinks Adam Cole is going to win it. Shawn Michaels said that he also wants Adam Cole to win, probably because he just looks at him and thinks, son. But he also had written down Keith Lee on a piece of paper, like he'd done a magic trick for himself.
Showing like, he's working.
You know, like gets the brown envelope out. And I wrote this down 2 weeks ago. That's not what I just said. That was baffling. But then we had the Adam Cole versus Keith Lee match to cap off NXT this week. I think this was a really, really good show. This felt like it was more together than last week's edition. Last week obviously was like buffered by a very good main event and a very good opening match, and then sort of in the middle lost its way a little bit. This had a bit of middle sort of fluff and padding. But I think that padding worked better. Like you said, it was very varied and gave you a lot of different like types of wrestling. It really did feel like kind of a wrestling showcase. It wasn't just one type of match. Not everything clicked for me, but I'm still thoroughly enjoyed watching the show this week, which, you know, recently in NXT history, I haven't necessarily as much as I used to. So, yeah, I'm pleased with this week's show.
I really, really liked it. You know, we've talked about little changes that we would make in that, but a really strong show, really varied show. Felt like an event. Really, really loved it. And, you know, even though I wouldn't say necessarily anything on the show was match of the year, just because, you know, we did have TakeOver Portland, and that was, you know, in front of a crowd, and that does make a difference. I do think we had one of the NXT moments of the year with Keith Lee. Like, the guy is phenomenal. He thoroughly deserves it. Wish it would have been under slightly different circumstances, but yeah, genuinely felt like a big swell of emotion for the guy. I hope this is the start of something really, really big for him in the company, because he's proven that he deserves that big spotlight. Just really, really great match as well, and yeah, NXT moment of the year.
Yeah, I'm so chuffed for Keith Lee. And like, you know, to think that before they went on USA, his gimmick was that he hadn't really been featured on NXT. And then the turnaround since, was it August it launched? Like September, like that, the turnaround in less than a year of that character and of his role within the company to now be carrying not just like the top championship, but the whole base. He's carrying the men's division of NXT now on his back. And I think he's only ever going to rise to the occasion. And I'm really excited to see, you know, that little tease of Karrion Kross watching on from the gallery with Scarlett. Like, that was the right choice as well, because that just says, like, even this is, you know, there's something still coming for you. There are still stakes here. Keith, you might have ascended to the top of the mountain, but it's about who's going to come and knock you off now. And I thought that was a really good choice. Like, you know, Karrion Kross getting involved with the match, wouldn't have been happy with it. That was perfect. Really good episode of NXT. Seek out the main event, because it is one of the better matches that NXT has put on all year. It's probably the best TV match they've had. I had a question before this, and I can't remember what it was, so instead I'll just ask you about high school.
Okay.
Rob Bard. Which is the next one that we're doing.
Sure is. Very exciting. Like, because I think everyone was sort of gearing themselves up for horror. Horror came out of the vote quite early on as the front runner. Obviously, like, everyone has been saying poor Laurie, because you've had your heart and your soul set on Victoria in England for a very long time. Almost won the first poll, dipped off in the second. And then the third one, it was at one point joint number one. And it only lost by about like two or three votes, which is just heartbreaking. Like, maybe one day
maybe one day old mate, but it is high school.
We've just been stuck in America, like it's City British Wrestling initially, and now we've just been like, we did the first, and then we've just immediately transferred over to being an American promotion.
just another
boring American indie promotion. Here we are again at high school. Victorian London would at least brought it back home. I'm pleased about the high school one, actually. I think it's at least the most different to what we've done before. I think horror and superheroes kind of very outlandish. I think kind of grounding it in something so mundane as high school, but still has so many stupid tropes from films and stuff, will actually make it, like, if you thought the squabbles were petty before, imagine what they're going to be like now. I'm really pleased that it's high school, actually.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really fun. I've had my conversation with Tom, my first conversation with Tom about my character. I have like three, basically. Every other one I've done, I've had basically one character I've wanted to play, and I basically told Tom that. But this time around, I'm sort of waiting to see who everyone else wants to, because I've got three characters, all quite different, and all could be slotted into a different view. Two of them heels, one of them face. So I don't even know what alignment I'm going with yet. But I'm basically kind of said to Tom, like, here are my options, and then basically you tell me whichever one kind of fits the grand plan.
I pitched Tom one character, and we had a 50-minute conversation about it. And as soon as I got off the call, my girlfriend suggested another character, and I'm going to play that character because it's so much better than what I pitched the first time.
Awesome.
But requires tech, so we'll have to look into how we make it happen.
I'm really looking forward to actually just doing the research for this one, because it means I get to see a lot. Because I'm one of my big black holes of film knowledge is I've not seen one of the John Hughes movies. I haven't seen 16 Candles. I haven't seen The Breakfast Club. It gives me a really good chance to seek these out and watch them. I want to see like Bring It On Again, She's All That, some of the classic, American Pie, the first, just the first one, that's fine.
Stop there.
But there's loads of because that's the thing, is like, we thought about it and it's like, oh, that seems a bit kind of tame compared to, like horror could have been of Victorian England. But actually, in terms of like the sheer amount of great stuff, like great high school movies there are, there's so many. It was like it's one of the cherished American cinema genres.
Yeah. Well, I think all you got to do to pick a character really is watch the opening of Mean Girls and just take something from the list when she's being shown the school and be like, none of those, any of those will do. These are all your archetypes of American high school film characters. So yeah, I don't know. I think it's gonna be really, really fun. I'm excited to see what everyone is. I'm excited more to see how Rick Thunder fits into this without it being creepy. I think that's the main thing. I'm expecting, and this is my bet for now, he's the janitor. That's my bet.
I mean, I'm personally hoping for a Steve Buscemi, like, what's up, fellow kids, where he's just trying to convince as a high schooler with his gigantic jet. I think that would be really, really funny.
Well, we'll have to wait and see. And that's on No Rolls Bar, which is on Parts Funknown, and you should definitely go and watch it. The most recent one, the superheroes one, went up last week, on the weekend, actually. And yeah, we'd really appreciate if you went and watched that, if you like silly superhero things and superheroes attempting to kind of wrestle. They're mostly wrestling. Then I think you'd enjoy that. Otherwise, in podcast land, you're going to have the Friday show with Luke. I'm not sure who Luke's guest is this week. You're going to get Saturday's SmackDown, and then we're back on the grind next week with Raw, NXT, AEW, etc., etc. Thank you so much for listening. Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.